Hi, this is Carlos Castellanos for DrawnBySuccess.com. This is part two of the Jeff Fisher interview.
And what's really funny is I did not have a business card for my business for many years, and it was kind of a joke around town that I was a designer without a business card. It was when I was trying to figure out how I was defining my business, and I had run out of my Jeff Fisher design cards and just didn't have a card. And then I think it was 2002. It was the first time I was asked to speak at the How Design Conference, And this friend contacted me and said, okay, now you have to do your business card. You have to finish it and have them with you when you go. And I did. And those things are crazy because you can hand out, 500 business cards in 4 days. You know, it's so easy to direct people to your website or whatever else you want them to go to see your work. You're not having – and it's an easy sell thing instead of a hard sell thing.
Yeah, especially if you're in one of these networking events or groups where you're giving out information. Like, let's say for you, for example, if you were educating, people on the importance of good branding design, on your card you can have a specific page where people go and download, a PDF of your presentation or something. You know what I mean? So now you've got them putting in an extra half an hour of their time thumbing through something that they've gotten from your site, getting them yet more involved and closer, one step closer to doing work with you, where you're asking them actually to take an action versus just swapping cards. You say, download this at my site. It's basically free, and, go check it out. So you're giving them a call to action, and you're getting them involved in a process.
One of the best cards I ever got at a conference was a business card size, but it was a CD, and it had the person's presentation on it. And that was, it's like, you don't have to do any work here. All you have to do is stick it in your computer. I mean, that was just a really, really clever idea. The thing about all this marketing, people think it takes so much time. It doesn't have to take a lot of time. But what I learned a long time ago is I have to make an assignment for myself, just like any other client project. I need to, what I do. I have no client contact on Fridays, which is wonderful, and that is the day that I do any marketing and promotion stuff that I need to do. And that started out years ago as summer office hours. And so at the end of May, I would change the message on my machine from Monday through Friday office hours to Monday through Thursday office hours. And then Labor Day weekend, this weekend, after it was over, I would change my message back to Monday through Friday.
Right.
And it must have been about 12, 13 years ago, I picked up the phone to dial in and change my voicemail message, and it was like, no, I don't want to work with clients on Friday. And so Friday becomes the day that I assign myself the jobs that need to get done for my own business instead of all the stuff that needs to be done for other clients. And that works really well. There is a process of training the clients to realize you're not going to be available on a Friday. But, again, it's my business, and I get to set the rules. And that's the boundaries I've set.
Right.
And I've had in the past there's a client who would email me with a crisis about 7 o'clock every Thursday night. And, the client was very much aware that I wasn't going to be contacting her on Friday, and I always knew that the missed ad deadline or publication deadline, whatever it was not a crisis, and first thing Monday morning I would contact her and we'd get it taken care of.
Yeah, because we're all familiar with the client crises. They're bugging you, they need something immediately, and then you bend over backwards to give it to them, and then what do they do?
the project
they sit on it for like
later.
2 weeks. Yeah. All of a sudden, the crisis isn't a crisis anymore. It's just sitting around wondering, okay, how come nobody's gotten back to me in 2 weeks, you know?
Right, exactly. It was almost this passive-aggressive thing where this person was really annoyed that I wasn't going to be available on Friday. Tried to make me available on Friday, and I'm not available on Friday. But that's worked out really well, too. I think everyone is their own worst client. And so when it comes to me having to do marketing and promotion stuff, social networking stuff, the majority of it is going to be done and just or at least prepared and set up for the following week on that Friday.
And yeah, I think, you know, the clearer you are on what you're doing and what you're really providing, the easier it becomes to come up with something that you're, you know, for marketing because, you know, your parameters are a little more well-defined. My problem has always been, you know, defining that those times. I mean, I've gotten to the point where, you know, Mondays and Tuesdays, for example, are when I work on my comic strip. I don't, you know, do anything else. It's just that. I don't even take phone calls. I let the answer machine get it because I don't want to be distracted from that. I mean, I could sit here and take, you know, calls all day long, but it would really take me off track. And the same thing with Twitter and all that. I mean, I turn everything off, and no one's going to get a hold of me Monday and Tuesday unless it has to do with the, you know, if it's a syndicate that have to do with the comic strip.
Right.
Aside from that, then I've got another day where I do my other stuff that I'm trying to develop, whether it be my marketing or my website stuff. So you really have to, you know, compartmentalize those areas and set aside, because, you know, a lot of freelancers complain that they don't have the time for marketing, but the truth is they're not making the time.
Right. And who decided that every time a phone rings, you have to pick it up and answer it?
Exactly.
I hear that
from a person that doesn't have a cell phone. That's easy
no,
for you to say.
I hear so many designers and illustrators like, I just have such a hard time getting any work done because the phone's always ringing. And I look at them and it's like, why do you answer it?
You don't answer it.
You know, that is why there are answering machines or voicemail. You know, you get back to the person as soon as you can without being interrupted. And, you know, when I'm designing a project, I'm not going to answer the phone. But I'm going to check the messages as soon as I'm done doing what I'm doing.
Right. Just because you can doesn't mean you have to.
Right.
You know.
Well, and that's a social media thing, you know, that applies as well. You know, you don't have to spend hours on Twitter or your Facebook page. You know, if you're involved in it, you know, one of the
I tell you, the first time I got my Twitter account, I was in there all the time.
Uh-huh.
And I think for, like, the first month, I've never gotten less work done than in that first month.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I was on there talking to everybody. I just thought that was the way to do it. Everybody else has got it on all day. They must be working. I'm sure that most of those people that have it on all day and are constantly, you know, twittering back and forth, their productivity level's got to be pretty low.
Oh,
I can't see how it can be high.
I avoided Twitter for a year until a friend of mine, a designer here in town, started tweeting about the fact that I wasn't on Twitter. And I started getting all these emails from friends. It's like, who's this guy and why aren't you on Twitter? But, you know, and it's the same thing with blogging. You don't have to do it every day.
Right.
You know, it's, I don't know where people get this assumption that it's like, you know, their old diary that they have to write in every night before they go to sleep or something. It was interesting. I spoke to the Willamette Writers Conference it was this last month. And, a lot of these writers are newly published or getting ready to be published, and they were looking at ways to market and promote themselves online. And this one woman came up to me, and she's like, I just don't have time for a blog. I can't be doing that writing every day and writing my book too. And I said, who said you had to write a blog every day? You know, do it when you have something really important to put out there or something that needs to be promoted, and, you know, leave it at that. It's not a diary.
I think it's because when you're just entering, just starting something out, you basically take a look around. I mean, it's just like when I started freelancing, and it's why people get caught up in doing things that don't work for them. When you start freelancing, you take a look around, see what everybody else is doing, and you do the same thing. And then you just kind of take for granted that that's the way it's done. Either, you know, you start looking at industry norms, for example, on pricing or how things are done, and you just kind of fall into, you know, into line. And I think with a lot of the stuff with the social media stuff, is the same thing. I mean, if you're new to it, you come in, you look around, you see what everybody else is doing, and everybody's telling you got to blog 2 or 3 times a week, and you got to be on Twitter and make daily updates, and you know, and you try to do that. But really, it is what works for you,
right?
You know, to whatever extent, you know, the goal is that you want to achieve. But it's got to work within the parameters of how you're running your business and running your life. I can't be on Twitter all day long.
Oh,
it just doesn't work for me. I tried it, and it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. I mean, I'll check it in the morning, and I'll check it maybe during lunch for like 10 minutes, and then maybe at night, you know, just to see if, you know, mostly my direct messages to see if anybody's trying to get a hold of me or asking me a question or something. But you know, yeah, you have to kind of mold it to fit, you know, your needs.
Well, and what you want to accomplish. You know,
sure.
I think that it's great to have a really good internet presence so anybody looking for you can find you. But, you know, don't kill yourself in the process of creating it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's a ton of people, you included, that I've met through Twitter. I mean, I started following you on Twitter, you know, I guess it was over a year ago, year and a half ago or so.
I've been on almost 2 years now, I think.
Yeah, so I started following you about a year and a half ago. So it's, you know, I've met a lot of great, interesting people on Twitter. But
initially I looked at it as a major time waster because I saw my friends wasting time.
Right,
doing
right.
It, and they were wasting a lot of time doing it. And then, you know, once I kind of got the hang of it, it's like, wow, this is a really incredible marketing tool if it's used right. And you can direct people wherever you want them to go for marketing and promotion and educating them or introducing them to other people or just sharing ideas. And, you know, again, it's a situation where you are in control of it. It shouldn't be in control of you. And I've gotten a lot of invitations to speak around the country as a result of Twitter,
right?
Which is great. But it's kind of funny when I am invited to go speak to somebody about social networking and social media. And it's like, hey, wait a minute, I want to speak about design. I just taught a class for a week down in Monterrey, Mexico at this incredible design school. Mm-hmm. And I was all excited when they first invited me because I thought it was going to be, you know, me getting to teach about design. No, they wanted me to teach the students about social networking as a marketing tool.
That's funny. You've become a social networking expert now.
I know. Who knew?
Who knew? Someone who didn't even want to go to Twitter.
I know. But, it was funny, too, because I got down there to the school. It's CDEM. It's they promote themselves as a design and innovation school. Incredible school. Beautiful, beautiful school. And all different disciplines of design, from architecture to interiors to graphic design, fashion design. And so the class was a real mix of students from all these different disciplines. But because they knew who I was, they wanted me to spend some time on actually creating a personal brand or a business brand.
Mm.
And so once I got down there, I kind of had to totally change my lesson plan and kind of incorporate that as, you know, creating a brand for yourself or your business and then implementing it into social networking.
Yeah, I think that seems to be a big gap, I think, where people have their traditional business and they're trying to figure out how to incorporate it into the whole social networking arena. You know, how to
I think
present
with
themselves.
Facebook, it helped a lot when they went from, well, it's just pages now, not fan pages.
Right.
But when they started doing the business page, it was so much easier to define how you were going to promote your business and then the personal page with, you know, having fun. Because when I first started on Facebook, it was right after it had gone fairly public. And because initially you had to have an EDU email address to even be on the site. And it was really tough to try to balance using it as a marketing tool for a business and then incorporating the, you know, meeting your friends from high school thing. with the business pages now, it's so much easier to keep that somewhat separate and really define how you want to market and promote your business.
Yeah, I mean, I've known some people that are actually sending people to their Facebook pages versus their website because it's easier to get into a dialogue with someone.
Right.
They see the conversations you're having. They're more apt to just jump in and say something and introduce themselves. And then from there, they go ahead and introduce their sites just because it creates less of a barrier between
you
and the person.
And you have, most people have some kind of Facebook presence, too. So
right.
They're at least aware of what they're getting into and how to get there. And so they do understand the process involved. And I've had a tremendous amount of work come my way through Facebook.
Especially
and
with
people
the, you know,
also fail to, maybe they just don't realize that you can interconnect so many of these things, so you're not having to do it multiple times. So you can have your different updates going to the different social networking sites. You can have your blog feed posted, on LinkedIn, on Facebook, the blog postings announced on Twitter. I mean, there's all these possibilities to cut the work,
right.
into a very small amount of time instead of it looking like this huge, daunting task. And LinkedIn has become such a great resource. When I first started getting LinkedIn invitations, I would go to the site and it's like, how do you even get around this thing? The navigation was so clunky. It wasn't inviting. There wasn't a lot of interaction at all or ability to interact with other people. You were just connecting, and then you might have their email address. It is so much better now when you have all the discussion groups and like you'd mentioned earlier, where people can find a meetup group about any topic. You can find a discussion group about any topic on LinkedIn
right.
now. And, again, it's part of putting yourself out there as the expert in just responding to some of the questions that people ask in the different groups. And, there again, it's important to be involved in groups other than just photography groups, if you're a photographer, illustrator groups, designer groups, and get involved in some business groups.
Jeff, I've had you on the line for a while, and I want to be really, really respectful of your time because I really do appreciate you coming on and talking to me.
I thought it's great to finally connect.
Yeah, it is finally great to connect.
In almost real world. At least the voice world.
One of the things I wanted to touch on with you is the question of assigning value to your work. The reason why I ask is because there was, this is actually from a designer on a forum I was on not too long ago, that was complaining, and this will actually lead to my next question on crowdsourcing sites, but he was complaining about how, crowdsourcing sites or people that, designers, illustrators, are how the ones that are charging very little money on these crowdsourcing sites, how they're hurting the industry. And he went on to say that, they should be charging X amount of dollars because that's the average that it goes for. And then he also had a beef with the designers out there, which I thought was really actually pretty funny. He also had a beef with the designers out there that were charging extraordinary sums of money, that they were overvaluing what they were doing. And, those people are ripping people off. And I, after reading that, I was kind of scratching my head a little bit, and it kind of reminded me that, your own pricing and your own value judgment is really, it really comes from a very personal place because, who's to say what he was charging was, for the person that was charging lower than he was, he might have been extraordinarily high. Right. For the person that was charging more than he was, he might have been extraordinarily low, and he might have been perceived by that person as one of those people who are giving their work away. How do you define value in what you do?
Well, I think one of the funny things is so many people just automatically send people to the Graphic Artists Guild handbook with their pricing structure, and it's not necessarily the gospel. It's a good guideline to see how things may be priced in different places around the country. So much of it does play into, geographic region, the size of your local market, what you do feel comfortable in valuing your work, when you're going to an hourly rate. The really funny thing for me is that In the past, my greatest fear was, well, if I raise my rates, I'm going to get less work. Well, every time I've raised my rates, I've gotten more work, not less work. And so I guess, you know, my question is, when do I stop raising my rates?
Right.
Because there's this perception, and you see it in a lot of other you know, elements in our society, if it costs more, it must be better. I mean, why do people go out and buy, you know, very expensive designer jeans? Well, you know, there's this perception that it's better. There's the status of it. And, you know, I do know people who hire designers just to be able to say, so-and-so designed my identity or did my photography or whatever. But I think you're right. It is a personal thing, and you have to kind of feel it out and figure out where you feel the most comfortable. Of course, early on in your career, your rates are most likely going to be lower. You're kind of proving yourself and getting a real-world education at the same time, and it's not necessarily fair to have a client paying, you know, the highest rates for that. At this, you know, I've been doing this for almost 33 years now, and there is some value in the fact that I have 33 years of experience in doing this, and I should know what I'm doing and should be able to share that with the client in the process of creating whatever they need to have done, and that is, you know, worth something. Yeah, it's, people think this is something new, as you know, with the internet, the discount designers and crowdsourcing and all this other stuff. You always had people trying to do it for the cheapest rate, no matter, you know, pre-computer, and they weren't necessarily the most educated in design or whatever the discipline was. I always tell, particularly designers, if you are questioning whether you're charging enough for your work, you're not. I mean, if there's just that question there, you need to raise your rates. Part of it is, I mean, you have to be charging enough to make a living. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And if a client scoffs at what you give them as an estimate, that's probably not your client anyway. I'm you know, lucky that I have a lot of clients I've worked with for many, many years, and they do value my work, and they don't think they're getting gouged, and then they appreciate the work when it's done and pay on time.
I think a lot of it has to do, too, with, you know, the way you present your work, the way you present the services that you provide. And the reason why I feel compelled to do these interviews with successful creative people is because I've yet to interview someone who doesn't have the same response to pricing that you just gave.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of that response that they are successful. I mean, they understand that what the true value of what they do goes beyond just the pretty picture or the pretty logo.
Right.
And they know how to present it in a way that's beneficial to their client. And they seek out the clients who will understand and appreciate the value that you're bringing to them.
And part of the personal aspect of it, too, is if a project that comes along that may not necessarily have the budget that, you know, would be normal for whatever stage you are at in your career, but it's a great project, you can take it. No one says you can't. And there's been occasions where, you know, potential clients have come along and the first thing they say is, I know I can't afford you, but I want to talk to you about this project, and maybe you can recommend someone to do the work. And immediately I appreciate the fact that they understand the value of my time and my work. But as you get into it, it's like, wow, this is something I could really have a lot of fun with, and obviously they have an incredible passion for, and I want to do it.
Right.
And you have that ability to make the decision to do it, if you know, whether you want to, and not feel bad about, I guess you're not discounting the value of your work at any other level. You know, I take on a limited number of pro bono projects for nonprofit groups each year. And I had to define the types of agencies that I was willing to work with. There were months where I was getting 10 and 12 requests for pro bono work, and you just can't do that mean, you wouldn't have any right. time for paying work.
Right.
But if it's a cause that I'm really vested in, I'm more than happy to help the organization out. And it has always led to additional work. So it's kind of an investment in the future, whether they end up paying me in the future for work, or it's someone who's attended the event that I've done the identity for, or it's meeting business owners on their board of directors. There is a different kind of payback in deciding to do that work pro bono.
Yeah, I mean, charging what you're worth initially, what you're talking about is freedom, freedom to choose, you know, and as an entrepreneur, which is what I consider ourselves,
mm-hmm.
You know, as an entrepreneur, I mean, that's what you're looking to create, is that freedom of choice. And, you know, what you had just mentioned, I mean, that's a, you know, working with nonprofits because you want to is a totally different animal than working for crappy fees because you have to.
You know, right.
One gives off a whole totally different vibe than the other. I mean, when you're in a situation where you're not charging enough and you're not taking the time to invest in yourself to learn how, you know, a better sales process, a better presentation process, to really define better what you do to your client, you know, and you're constantly charging, and you're constantly up against these people that are charging less and making your business about, you know, okay, I can charge less than this guy. That's not buying you the freedom that you're talking about. And it, you know, and when you're working on these, you know, these low fee projects, you don't feel good about them either. When you're charging what you're worth and what you're, you know, what you're talking about, and you take on some of these nonprofits, I mean, you can work on something literally for free and feel good about it, feel great about it.
Exactly.
Because it's your choice to do it, not because you have to do it. And you're able to do it because you're putting yourself out there and running your business the way it's supposed to be run, and that allows you to do that.
Yeah, when I'm talking to design students and the pricing thing comes up, one of the examples I always bring up is like, you know, do you want to be doing 100 logo projects for $30 a logo, or do you want to aspire to do one logo project for $3,000? And that's when they kind of get it. They're kind of like,
right.
Oh, you know, I see, you know, you really eventually want to be doing the $3,000 project and have it be one project instead of, you know, killing yourself doing 100 projects. But they don't get it until they, you know, it's in that kind of terms. And, you know, you mentioned the crowdsourcing sites, and I won't go near them personally, but I do have a problem with, there's one major aspect of them that I have a huge problem with, and that is the lack of direct communication between the designer and the client. Because so much is lost when you don't have that. When you're just doing it by posting designs online and the client's, you know, deciding, or when there's no true interaction between the client and the designer, nobody wins. It's doing a disservice to the designer, and it's doing a disservice to the client. And that is my, you know, probably my biggest complaint about any kind of crowdsourcing activity. The second thing is that the designer is not getting paid for all their time. And I just will not do spec work, and that's what that is.
Right. You know, it kind of gets back to really the understanding where your value lies.
Right.
Part of that communication, and I agree with you, I mean, they don't have that communication. And, you know, from a client point of view, crowdsourcing is great if all you're looking at is price, which is what most of the people that go on there are looking for. They're just basically looking for the
cheapest.
No,
that is it.
You know.
And they don't want to, you know, if they can get a logo for
$100,
they want a logo. Yeah.
Yeah, that's part of your value. When they're going to work with Jeff Fisher, I mean, it's that communication. It's that relationship with you. It's with the understanding that you will take the time to understand what their needs are, what their business is, and really come up with a proper solution. You're not getting that in the crowdsourcing. And that's where, and again, you're not just supplying a logo. You're not just supplying some kind of a graphic. There's so much more that people buy. And this is what I really try to hammer home, and I get so passionate about this, but really, as a client, there's so much more that they buy than just a graphic. They're buying a relationship with the designer or the illustrator. They're investing, you know, in that understanding, in that relationship. And that's really what you're selling. You're selling that understanding, that experience, and that relationship that you're developing. That's really where the money is, and you're not getting that in the crowdsourcing sites.
Right. And so often, I mean, the question that I get a lot is, well, are you having to get a lot of new clients? Because once you design the logo for them, then you're done. No, there's a lot more to it. I'm not just designing the logo. I'm creating the entire brand for the business, and that involves designing a lot of other elements. And I have clients that I initially designed a logo for that I have worked with for, I think the longest one right now is 18 years. And they keep coming back for things. And I've had businesses where I have redesigned the logo two or three times because of little changes in, like, the name of a law firm or something. And they keep coming back to me because they are getting that additional value that is just beyond the graphic itself. I met with a client yesterday. It's kind of funny. It's a local client, and I had not met with her in person in over a year and a half. But she's doing a new venture and really thought it was important for us to get together and just kind of brainstorm what is happening on this product that she's going to be introducing. But initially, I was hired to just design the logo for her new business. They had just had a name change, and that was their immediate need. Well, since then, I've done, you know, print ads for major national magazines and things for television and billboards and product. And it's not just designing the logo. In the process of the 6 years, this incredible relationship has developed. And that project came out of the fact that I had done a logo for her husband's law firm about 15 years ago. So when you take on a logo project, it's much more than just creating that one symbol and then having to go on to the next project. You can, you know, have these incredible relationships that go on and on.
Yeah, once you've gotten that client in and you develop that relationship, you know, there are a ton of other services that they need that are tied to the service that you just provided that, you know, may not be, I mean, a lot of those services may not be things that you specifically go into on your website.
Right.
But those are services that you can provide once you've got them in and you've got them to trust you and hire you. Now you've got a satisfied client on your hands. Now you can say, well, we also do this, and you may also might want to think about doing this as well, because that's going to be part of this whole marketing thing, and this is going to meet your objectives. You know, it's just thinking beyond that initial one-time project, drive up that customer value over time.
Yeah, I was hired to design the logo for a hotel years ago, and it ended up being 5 months of constant work once the logo was established, because absolutely everything for the hotel, down to embroidering the logo on bathrobes, had to be done. And, it took almost all my time for a period of 5 months to really complete the project, when initially they thought it was just going to be a logo design project.
Yeah, it's important to learn how to really grow that initial project. Because, I mean, that's, you know, because I've talked to a lot of people where they just talk to clients where it's just like they seem to think it's a one-time off project, you know. I actually have a friend of mine who does mascots and you know, those kind of things.
Right.
And he says, well, you know, my clients are just, you know, they call me once, I do the mascot, and then, you know, I constantly have to be looking for new clients. You know, if that mascot is for something, for their website company or whatever it is, that person needs a lot more stuff than just that mascot. And they're going to need that mascot put on a lot of different things. And one of the suggestions that I had was, you know, you can, you know, most business owners are in the same predicament that that we find ourselves in many times, that they don't market as much as they should. They, you know, they're busy doing the thing that they're doing. So a lot of times they drop the ball on the marketing end. What you can do is you can start applying that mascot and develop, you know, marketing programs for them to start promoting, you know, 4 or 5 times a year, and put that into play for them so that they don't have to think about that. You can create these marketing things for them using the mascot. So now it's Christmas or whatever, you put the mascot in a, you know, in a Santa Claus hat, or, you know, come up with some kind of a little campaign, cute campaign with the mascot. Pick another holiday that's not overdone, and do the same thing, and come up with three or four of those things a year for them. And now you've just multiplied that one project into like four or five projects for the year.
Yeah, well, and just dealing with vendors. I mean, most clients don't want to, or have the time to deal with all the vendors to have a mascot put on shirts or caps or whatever.
Right.
And if you offer that as a value-added service to them, you know, not only are you taking a load off them, it's billable time. And when I do that, it always saves me time, because what ends up happening is the client ends up putting me in contact with the vendor anyway, because they don't understand the process of what needs to be done.
Right.
And so then I'm already involved. They should just, you know, involve you from the beginning
right.
if you offer that as a service. So, you know, yes, I can go in and say, I have web people you can work with. I have signage people, people who do advertising specialties, you know, embroidery people, and just include that as part of the whole project initially, and just kind of streamline the process and assure that you're going to have a steady stream of income.
And it's really from that you get the biggest growth in your business comes from that, because, you know, the initial push or the initial investment to acquire that client, whether it be from attending a live event or sending out promotional material, however it is that you end up acquiring them, there's time and resources that are spent to do that. Once you've got that person in your office, you know, to figure out a way to create another 4, 5, 6, 7 projects for them down the line, at that point, that's a freebie.
Well, and I think the operative word in what you said was investment. And a lot of times, designers, illustrators, photographers will look at the whole process of getting new clients or creating that relationship as kind of a bother.
Right.
And it is an investment, because it can be a very long-term relationship.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, I generally tell people that, you know, anything that they're going to put money out for, because they do tend to look at anything that they spend money on as an expense versus an investment in their business, whether it be flying out to a conference or, you know, I mean, I've read forums where people complain about that. You know, they need a conference on marketing because they're not doing very well, you know, but they'd love to go to the conference, but they, you know, they don't want to go through the added expense of getting on a plane and booking a hotel for 2 nights, you know.
Yeah.
To get that resolved. Well, you're looking at it as an expense.
Yeah.
You know, look at it as an expense, as an investment to solve your initial problem that you have, because if you don't go and you don't get the answers you need, nothing's going to change for you.
Right. You're going to be spinning your wheels.
Yeah, so they have to really stop looking at it as an expense and really an investment in yourself.
The whole issue, too, of establishing these relationships, the huge bonus there is the referrals you get from it. And that is what starts creating the business, where you're not out looking for business yourself all the time, because you have these successful relationships and they end up doing part of the marketing for you, which is great. I mean, I was so pleased yesterday. I met with this woman for the first time, and we've been dealing with each other online for quite some time. But she wrote on Twitter, "Great meeting with Logomotives today, the man with the plan to brand exciting new ventures." Well, that's nice advertising,
right, yeah.
When it's out there on Twitter.
Sounds like a good tagline, too.
Yeah, no, but I mean, it was really nice of her to do that. She didn't have to do that. And what a great, you know, referral that's out there in the world.
I think she just came up with a nice USP for you there.
I know. But, but yeah, I mean, you don't know, you know, who people are going to share your name with and who's going to be sent your way. So that's one thing I always do whenever anyone contacts me. It's like, how did you find me? Because there again, oftentimes there's someone you need to thank.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. And you want to see what's working.
Yes.
You know, how people are getting back to you.
That's funny. Early in my career, I did some print advertising for my business. And it was one of the least effective things. I mean, you would think that, you know, with logo design being a very visual medium, that print advertising might draw some attention. It was probably one of the least effective marketing promotion methods I ever used.
Now, you're talking about mailers or an ad?
No, I mean print advertising in publications.
In a publication.
Yeah, because I always have industry publications, advertising publications contacting me to possibly run a print ad. And it's just like, no, thank you. It doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the kind of business and the audience you're trying to reach.
I think there's too many variables in doing something like that. You would really have to target it to a particular audience instead of just like being in an advertising publication or design publication.
Right.
Besides all the other things that I'm doing work, so why change them? I mean, I do always try new things, but I don't necessarily go back to things that just have not worked in the past. You will not find me cold calling anytime soon.
Yeah, I never liked cold calling myself. I would always prefer to go see someone, you know, or a group of people in person. You know, the cold calling thing always seemed to me. I guess the difference is that I hate to be cold called.
Well, I do too.
You know what I mean? So I get that. I get when someone calls and they're cold calling me, I feel I just feel badly. It's not a good situation for me. So I feel like I'm putting people in that thing. I guess that's where my perspective comes from. So I don't like doing it, but I don't mind leaving the studio and talking to people and which is essentially it's the same thing. You know, it's a little more investment of time and takes a little more planning.
But it is more personal. And
yeah,
I think even in the internet age, being personal is a very, very good thing because so many people just don't use that as a tool.
I agree. Jeff, I want to thank you profusely for getting on this call with me. I've had you on the phone for quite a while.
I feel like I've been talking with an old friend.
It feels like I've known you for years. Is there anything else? Where can people find more information on you, your books?
The primary link is jfisherlogomotives.com, and that will get them pretty much anywhere. And if you just do a Google search for Jeff Fisher Logomotives, a ridiculous amount of stuff comes up.
All related to you, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah. No, but it's just...
there isn't another Jeff Fisher out there with Logomotives.
You know, but that's another... I mean, well, there is. There's, you know, a certain football coach that people have very strong feelings about, but there's not a lot of other ones that come up when you just do a search for Jeff Fisher Logomotives. But, you know, and I think that's something else people don't realize, too, and you have to consider it when you're marketing and promoting yourself, is that, you know, even your Twitter posts show up on Google searches now, so...
I'm glad you brought that up because I've seen a lot of designers.
Uh-huh. Don't want to talk bad about clients or
talk about bad
other designers.
I was wondering how to approach that delicately. Yeah, but I mean, they, you know, I got this client that's being a pain in the ass now.
Yeah.
Like, it just went down for like the fourth revision. What the hell is he thinking?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, do you realize that this is out for everyone to see?
Yeah.
I don't get that.
I don't either. Or people talking bad about their bosses. And
yeah.
You go to their profile, and it shows the link to where they work.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So yeah, you have to be careful, but yeah, I'm easy to find.
So the lesson there is, it may feel like a, you know, one-on-one conversation when you're Twittering with someone, but it's not. It's an open line.
Yes.
And everyone can find it, including your clients that you're talking
that.
About. And if they're not the ones that you're talking about, they're going to feel like they may be.
Yeah.
Or they may feel like if they are a client, you may start bitching and bawling about them.
Right. What a message to put out there to potential clients.
Yeah, lovely.
This has been a lot of fun, and I appreciate your persistence in trying to arrange it with me. And I'm
all that follow-up.
Connected. Yes, it is follow-up.
All right. Fantastic, Jeff. Thank you. I appreciate it. I hope I get a lot of people coming to your site, checking you out. Check him out on Twitter. He's always got something interesting to share. Jeff, thanks again. Appreciate
it,
buddy.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff. Bye-bye.